let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. On today's program, internationally renowned psychologist and one of the world's leading experts on human behavior, Toma LaBelle, shows us how overlooked factors in our workdays and physical environments, unconscious habits, even traits like our faces and voices, have the power to make or break our careers. In whatever works, the small cues that make a surprising difference in our success at work and how to create a happier office, Toma explores groundbreaking psychological research on job performance, satisfaction, and creativity. Going beyond obvious considerations like salary, title, and common culture to shed light on the hidden factors that have profound effects on how well we can do our jobs and how happy we are at work. Toma has served as chair of the School of Psychological Services at Tel Aviv University, the director of the Adler Center for Child Development and Psychopathology, the dean of students, and a member of the executive board of the university. She's been a visiting professor at Harvard University, visiting scholar at Tufts University, University of California at San Diego, and New York University as well. Published dozens of articles in some of the most prestigious academic peer-reviewed journals, received many prestigious research grants. Her book, Sensation, The New Science of Physical Intelligence, was published in 15 countries. Toma LaBelle, author of Whatever Works, The Small Cues That Make a Surprising Difference in Our Success at Work and How to Create a Happier Office, our guest on This Week in America, coming to us from Israel. Toma, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much. It's great. And thank you. It's an honor to be invited.
Well, it's our pleasure to have you. And I'm so looking forward to this program. And Whatever Works, this book is unique. It's not the typical self-help book on finding success in work or career. Most of those focus on what I call the obvious: motivation, organization, networking. Your book, though, focuses on elements that we're less aware of. And even if we're aware of them, we often don't think that they really matter. These elements that are based on cutting-edge science, novel experiments, and many are surprising, even counterintuitive, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, as you said, most self-help books, which are very important and helpful, are focusing on the obvious factors. But I wanted to focus on things that we can implement easily, and yet we don't pay attention to them. They are under our nose, and yet either they can be counterintuitive or we pay some attention to them, but we really don't think they matter. And in fact, they matter, and these small things like the light, the temperature, I'll talk about it hopefully as we go along with our interview, gestures, clothes, music, everything, influence the way we are perceived and the way we perform, how creative we are, and influence our well-being. And once we pay attention to them and we are aware of them, we can really change our performance, enhance our performance, and enhance our creativity and definitely our well-being.
In your book, Whatever Works, you start with whatever works at the office, something we probably don't give a lot of thought to, the impact of the indoor environment. You start off by saying, if you think good design is expensive, you should look at the cost of bad design. And when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Talk about the office layout, why this is important. And I'm going to say it's important at the office. It's even important as more and more of us are working at home.
Exactly. When I wrote, it's interesting because when I wrote the book, it was before the COVID-19, most of the writing, and I didn't think about it, you know, in these terms. But now that more and more people are working from home, I realize how important it is to know how to set your office and the temperature and the light. So let me give you some examples. We think that light, okay, I know light, most people think that, yeah, I need light. But there are many studies that show, for example, that sunlight is more important than artificial light. So if, first of all, if you choose a room, if you have your office, and if you have a window, don't close it and turn on the light or just sit, you know, with looking at your computer and say, I don't need any light. Because the sunlight increases your alertness, the daylight, I mean, increases your alertness, and you simply feel better. So first advice, if you have to choose a room at home, for example, choose a room with a window if you can. And if you have a window, don't shut the shutters. I mean, let the sunlight or the daylight come in.
Yes.
Second of all, sorry, yeah, you wanted to ask something.
No, I was just saying, yes, that's so important that we often go in, the sun's bright, and suddenly we're shutting up and we're in a totally dark room, and it's sort of defeating the purpose of having sunshine come in on us, isn't it?
Exactly. And so that's one thing. And if you don't have daylight, or if you work in the evening, still, if you want to be alert, that's a very easy thing to do. Turn on the light. Don't turn it off and just look at the computer screen and say, okay, I don't need the light, because it really enhances your energy. But light also influences us in different ways. For example, I'm sure nobody thought about it till they did that studies, that people have more self-control and self-awareness in a lighted room. So if, for example, we all know, for example, that we don't shout at colleagues or lose our temper so easily if there are other people around. Yes, we are all self-aware of ourselves, that we have more self-control. Light is also one of these people looking at us. When we are in a well-lit room, there is a better chance we won't lose our control, and we will be more self-aware of our behavior. So this is one more thing that I suggest, to put the light on, to be more energetic, to be more self-control. And as I said, if you can choose between daylight and artificial light, always choose the daylight if you have a choice.
Our guest on This Week in America, coming to us from Israel, is Talma Lobel. If you're spelling that, Googling that to find information on the book, and I'll give you all of that during the program, and you'll find it on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. That's Talma and Lobel. The book is Whatever Works, the Small Cues That Make a Surprising Difference in Our Success at Work and How to Create a Happier Office. She's got her website, talmalabelle.com. I'll give you that later. Books at Amazon and all of the usual places. Under Whatever Works at the Office is something interesting, the impact of temperature. Should we be cold? Should we be hot? How do we go about setting the temperature to get the maximum proficiency?
Yeah, well, first of all, the optimal temperature was found to be around 70 Fahrenheit. But within the range of moderately warm, 60 to 80, to moderately cold, cognitive performance suffers more when it is too warm than when it is too cold. And I'm talking within the range of moderately cold and moderately warm. Complex tasks are more affected than simple tasks. Temperature also influences our decision-making and conformity. People who sit in a warm room chose more often what other people chose. Temperature has a role in negotiations and marketing, because if you want other people to agree with you, to conform with you, raise a little bit the temperature. On the other hand, if you're in a discussion group, lower a little bit the temperature, because you don't want people to agree with you automatically. You want to think together. In general, when you want to perform, choose a comfortable temperature around 70. But if you, it's better to be a bit colder than a bit warmer. Because if you're a bit warmer and you feel comfortable, you will pay the price, because either you will perform not as good as if it was a little bit colder, or you will, even if you perform well, you'll be tired, more tired after that, which will affect the next task.
All of this and so much more in Talma's book, Whatever Works. And you talk about clothing, how important that is. One chapter is, will this tie get me hired or fired? What do you wear to look smarter, and maybe more importantly, work smarter as well? Talk about the proficiency of the efficiency of wearing clothes, how important wardrobe is.
Well, unfortunately, it is important. And I'm saying unfortunately because I really would love it that people will be judged based only on their merit and not what they were, just to make it clear.
Yes.
But unfortunately, and like all the other things that I'm saying, everything I want to stress that is based on studies that were published on top journals. And I'm not just, you know, saying things out of my head. Everything is done on studies. So studies show that the way we are dressed often influence the way we are perceived. For example, a study that I really don't like the results, but they are there, is that they had three violinists dressed in different attire. One violinist was dressed with a concert dress, one was in a very evening dress, and one with t-shirt and jeans. And then they asked them to perform several pieces, but then the performance was dubbed, and actually the judges heard the same music from the three, exact same music at the start of the performance from the three violinists. And they asked music students and people of the Philharmonic of that city to judge their performance. And they judged the performance of the violinists who wore t-shirt and jeans is worse than the other two, even though they heard exactly the same performance, which means it's really disturbing, these results, I think. But it means that, you know, even though they heard exactly the same performance, they still thought that she performed worse, and they didn't think it's because they didn't think that it was because of the t-shirt, but that affected them. So we are judging even the performance of somebody based on that person's clothes. It's even worse with women. I mean, women are judged more harshly if they are not dressed according to what people are expecting from them. And if they are, sometimes if they are wearing something which is considered a little bit too sexy, they may be perceived not professionally enough, not intelligent enough, etc. So clothes influence. Having said that, I don't say that you wear exactly what you're expected. First of all, be comfortable. But remember that when you go to an interview or negotiation, it does affect the other person. Just know this fact, and then it's your choice what to do. But I want to say another thing which might be surprising to some of the people more than this. I think these people might have guessed. The way we're dressed doesn't influence only the way we are perceived, but the way we perceive ourselves and consequently the way we behave. I want to show you an example of a study. They gave us, the researchers gave two groups a white coat, to one group white coat of a doctor's coat, and to the other group a regular jacket, and they asked them to perform a cognitive task. Those who wore the white coat, which is like a doctor's coat, performed better. In another study, they gave two groups white coat, but one group they said it's a doctor's coat, to the other group they said it was a painter coat, and then again they gave them a cognitive task. Those who thought it was a doctor's coat performed better than those who thought it was a painter coat, which means that the way we are dressed influences also our behavior. There was another study about negotiations. Again, one group was dressed very professionally. The other one was dressed, you know, with the flip-flops and training and, you know, really not professionally. And they asked them to negotiate about something against somebody else. And those who were dressed professionally reach more concessions than the other group, which shows that it really affects our behavior. So we have to remember that, then we have to decide what we want to do.
It's interesting you're talking about how our perception, it may be conscious, it may be subconscious. I'll take this and talk about those people working from home. I have the option when I get up in the morning, I can continue to work in my pajamas, not even change my clothes, or I can get dressed up some to work at home. Obviously, you would recommend that we get out of our pajamas so we at least feel like we're in work mode at the time.
Yeah, definitely. You know, if you feel comfortable to stay with your pajama and lie in bed with your laptop, that's fine for a while. But in general, if you're working at home, I would definitely recommend, unless you know yourself, and some people are always different, get dressed. You don't have to get dressed like you're with people, but get dressed normally, not stay with your pajamas, that you have the boundaries, and then also have a designated place that you are working in. As I said, you might change and go for a while to the kitchen or to the bed, but in general, make a place that it's your designated workplace. It's very important. And as I said before, the factors that may help you decide which room, if you have the choice, not always at home you have a choice, but if you have, choose a room with a window. And if you can, and I can talk about it later or now if you want, a window with a view, if there is such a thing.
Interesting. Yes, and you talk about the role of nature. You feel better if you can look outside and see green. And if you want to take a little break, get outside and walk in the green. That really has an impact on us, doesn't it?
It has a tremendous impact. People don't realize how important it is. For example, and it has on two areas. First of all, it reduces stress. And the second, it really increases our performance. So, for example, in Japan, they made a big study that they took, went to 24 different forests. Each time they brought several people, they divided into two groups. One group came to the forest. One group went to an urban environment. The next day, they switched. Those that were in the urban environment came to the forest and vice versa. They measured their physiological measures like heart rate, cortisol, which is the stress hormone, blood pressure, before they came, then during, where they were asked to sit down, and then they took a short walk of about 16 minutes. And they found again and again in different places that those who came to the forest were less stressed based on their physiological measures than those who came to the urban place. Another study conducted in the state, several studies conducted in the state, asked one in Stanford, one in Michigan, in Arbor, asked people to take a walk either in urban, in Ann Arbor, for example, or near the campus in a park. It doesn't have to be a wild forest, in a park. And then they asked them to perform a cognitive task. And those who walked in the park, this time for almost an hour, performed better, statistically differently better than those who perform or who walked in the urban place. So there are many studies showing that simply sitting or walking in nature reduces your stress and enhances your performance. But you can tell me, but what if I don't have a nature near my home or my office? So there is a solution to that too. First of all, if you just have even trees that you can look at and flowers, you don't have to have a whole park, that will do the job. But if you don't even have that, suppose your office is in the middle of urban place, meaning there are no trees and no flowers, then you can look at photos of nature. Or you can take an imaginary walk in nature via internet. I'm saying that based on studies that did that and found similar results. For example, in that particular study, they showed participants a really scary movie, and they were really stressed. And then they took them to imaginary walk, either in urban place or in the nature. And they showed that those who took the imaginary walk in nature, they reduced their stress much more than those who took their walk in urban place. So, as I said, you can do it via internet. You can look at pictures. Yes. You can have plants in the office. And one last thing that I want to say about that even sometimes a short look at nature, like 40 seconds, can do the job. There was one study that they asked one group to look at for 40 seconds at a roof, which is only concrete, and the other half to look at a roof which was covered with grass and flowers. And then they gave them to complete a very boring task that really needed their attention. Those who looked at a green roof performed better. So all these together, taken together, is really, even if you have a choice, go out, even for a short walk, or just look from the window at the view for a few minutes, and then continue working, you will see. You will be less stressed and perform better.
All of this and so much more in Thomas' book, Whatever Works, The Small Cues That Make a Surprising Difference in Our Success at Work. I have to take a break. When we come back, we'll have a few minutes. I want to talk about how technology affects us. And boy, with the smartphone, is it good? Is it bad? Is it helping? Is it hurting? We'll talk about that with Thomas when we come back after these messages on This Week in America. Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America, Talma LaBelle, our guest on the program. Her book is Whatever Works, The Small Cues That Make a Surprising Difference in Our Success at Work and How to Create a Happier Office. So much great information in the book. The book's available at Talma's website. I'll give you all of that at the conclusion of the program. Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places. And information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Talma, let's talk about technology. You write a lot about that. And boy, with the smartphone, we think it's helping us and we think we're paying too much time to it. How does the technology, in particular the smartphone, affect us?
Well, as you said, most of us can't imagine our life now without the smartphone. We all know this smartphone panic that I forgot my smartphone. I have to go back and take it. I can't say, you know, there are so many anecdotes that if we had more time, and I talk about it in the book, that, you know, how people become really stressed if they forgot their phone for an hour. But it definitely it helps us. You know, we are more available at work and not only at work, of course. And we can look at the internet and we can find answers to many questions that we couldn't find before. All these is known. But I want to talk about the things that it disturbs us. And there was a study conducted in the States quite recently, when they asked people, three groups. One group was asked to come into the room and leave their belonging outside, but just take the smartphone and put it on their desk because they might be using it later on. The other group was asked to come in and put the smartphone either in their bag or in their pocket, where they always keep it, not on the desk. The third group was asked to leave all their belongings outside, including the smartphone, not to let it in. And then they gave them a cognitive task. Those who had the phone on their desk performed worse. Those who had the phone outside performed best. But then you can tell me, okay, even though it was on silent, they still could check the messages. And even if they didn't read it, you know, they probably looked from time to time and that affected them. So the researchers did another study where they asked them to turn the phone off, which means they couldn't see anything, and did the same thing. And yet, those who had the phone on the desk performed worse than the other two groups. What it shows is that if you really want to work on something and concentrate, don't think, okay, I turned the phone off or I put it on silent, it won't disturb me, because it does. Take the phone and put it someplace else, in another room if you can. And then, if you're really expecting a call, go after an hour and check. If you know, if you think that in this hour something terrible happened and they try to call you. Other than that, put it outside the room and focus on your task. You will see that you will perform better. Just the fact that the phone is next to you disturbs our performance. And of course, you know, all these things that we don't have the boundaries between work and home, which is not it's not a good thing usually, and it really increases the stress, and people are more stressed if they're all the time with the phone and are available. It's good for the work, but so some organizations really put the boundaries, and unless it's emergency, they say, okay, we don't talk after a certain time with the work. Some don't, and they pay a price of stress.
There is such great information in Talma's book. The book is called Whatever Works, Talma LaBelle. That's T-H-A-L-M-A, LaBelle, L-O-B-E-L. Her website is talmalabelle.com. Book available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual places. And you can, of course, go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and get all the information on the book and order the book there as well. One chapter I checked to go back to, Tidy Desk, Tidy Mind. I have a feeling I'm going to be cleaning off my office desk as soon as we finish the interview this morning. So much great information there. Talma, thank you so much for spending some time with us. Would love to do it again. Great information in the book. Thank you for being with us on the program.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And there are so many more things I wanted to say, so maybe we'll have another chance. If not, I hope people will read the book and learn, and it will improve their life, I'm sure.
It really will. The book is called Whatever Works. Our guest is Talma LaBelle. Information, of course, available at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.